Welcome back to the Can We Fix It podcast. Today we are welcoming back, what's the opposite of Kingmaker? King Killer? Jason Royas to the pod for a fucking victory lap and a half.
Yes, thank you for having me on. This is the second time. I imagine it's probably not going to be the last. I'm just going to come here for every podcast.
I'm going to be honest. I kind of feel like I want you to be like my hype man, like the Little John.
Yeah.
Okay.
What?
Exactly. That's what we're here for. You know what I mean? I also feel weird just sitting here talking to my, well, it's not talking. It's mostly yelling, yelling to myself within my apartment, just being like, what the fuck is happening? So today on the pod, we are going to talk about the redheaded stepchild of the Democratic Party, progressives. Progressives snatching a defeat from the jaws of victory since the early 2000s. So first and foremost, apologies, Jason, that we took what could have been a really fucking dope victory that you handed Rhode Island, getting rid of the Nicktatorship, and just replaced it with the same dudes, but this time with bow ties.
That's right. And hair dye.
And hair dye. And hair dye. So, super sorry for squandering that super dope. I mean, I say it like I was there. I think we all know that if I was there, I would not have been voting for fucking Joe Shikarchi and Blaz, the two most like mediocre white men.
No, Blaze is a progressive.
All time. Progressive.
Blaze
okay.
is a East Side progressive.
See, it's a good thing that we have drinks for this, because yeah, this entire episode is probably going to be like mostly rage fuel. First of all, let's go ahead and talk about what progressives are, because I feel like there's a whole group of Democrats who have decided that like progressive is a cool word that like earns them like street cred with the young people,
facts,
but don't actually have any intention of being progressive. So for me, progressives literally just means progress. And it's like this weird, crazy idea that we should spend your tax dollars on you as opposed to like giant stadiums, corporate lobbyists, tax loopholes for wealthy people. There also comes with that like a level of social reform that the conservative Democrats are not necessarily as in touch with, that they don't really give a shit about as much. I don't think it's that they're not in touch. Like, they know that we need social reform. They just don't care as much as they care about, like, the economy.
Yeah.
So some things that I feel like you should have to, first of all, progressive policies are mad popular.
I mean, it's common sense policies too,
right? Because we're looking again at progress.
Yeah.
But because progressives suck at messaging, a lot of the poll numbers don't look like that, right? So you have to word things very carefully. But 60% of American voters are in favor of universal health care.
Boom.
Boom. 60%. For those of you who can't math or took classical math like the rest of us, that's more than half.
Boom.
72% of American voters support the Supreme Court upholding Roe v. Wade.
That's right. 72, not 71.
There's also, there's a little nuance there. There's like, I think 26% want Roe v. Wade kept in place with more restrictions. 22% want Roe v. Wade kept in place with less restrictions. It's like, it is very nuanced, but overall 72% of Americans support the Supreme Court upholding Roe v. Wade. Now, this next one is a little weirder and I think speaks to the messaging. While only 28% of American voters agree with the term or support the term defund the police, a whopping 70% of American voters are in favor of the actual policy that those words mean, which is reallocating some of the police funds to other social institutions, such as homelessness initiatives, drug counseling and rehab, domestic violence, things like that. So when you frame it appropriately, 70% of Americans are in favor of less state and federal funding going to police forces and putting people in prison. So if progressive policies are so dope, well, I mean, this also speaks to why everybody wants to call themselves a progressive, right? Mm-hmm. So like, I also think that you have to throw some actions behind those words.
Yeah.
And that your actions should be able to be weighed against your, you know, self-identifying as a progressive, right? So like, we had people who self-identified as progressives, but then voted to arm Brown University campus police with weapons.
Because Brown University police needs that. The amount of crime that happens on their street.
But like, aren't Democrats supposed to be pro-gun control? So like, how the fuck are you calling yourself like a radical leftist and being like, give cops more guns?
See, I don't know. It's Rhode Island. So like, I don't know. Okay, I don't know.
Right. So that brings us to the Chris Blazewskis of the world, who say out loud that they're progressives. I mean, he pitched to us all the time that he was like our progressive ally in the speaker's leadership team. And like, he was the one helping us like get progressive things passed. As I said with Matt Jerzyk, if he was the secret progressive in the speaker's office, he was fucking terrible at it.
Yeah. So, I mean, wait, his plan is to become speaker eventually. Right.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that's been his plan since he was like 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
It sure seems like he and Chikarchi had their like road to the White House mapped out from birth.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine a President Chikarchi? Oh my God. No, stop. I'm sorry. That's, we can't even. All right. I do want to tell you like one petty Chikarchi. Well, two petty Chikarchi stories, because let's be honest, that's what the people are here for. He is a very charming man, but he's also mad weird. And he just says shit in like the weirdest possible way. So there was one day where one of the representative's old kindergarten teachers was at the state house. I guess they were retiring from teaching after like however many decades. And they were getting, you know, the citation and the standing ovation mm-hmm. from all of us representatives. A super awesome use of your tax dollars, by the way. Is just like congratulating people on having jobs and doing them until before they're dead. Go team.
Shout out to the representative that still knows who their kindergarten teacher is. Like, shout out to them.
I mean, like, I know my kindergarten teacher's name, but I have no fucking idea where she is.
Yeah, I mean,
she could be in Hawaii by now.
It's pretty dope.
That or person, she could be listening. Mrs. Fields? Is that you, Mrs. Fields?
The person that, like, got their former kindergarten teacher on the House floor should be the next speaker, because
that's a political game.
Hell yeah.
Just be like, I give a citation to every voter in Rhode Island, eventually.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Well, okay. So he's introducing, Joe Chikarchi is introducing the teacher, and he goes, you know, I'm going to refrain from asking whether Representative Bill O'Brien was a good little boy or a naughty little boy.
He said that?
A naughty little boy. Bro, I'm in direct eye contact.
Oh, like, oh, other established Republicans? Oh, go fuck yourself. You're out. And the Democrats, like progressives, like, I mean, we're getting to that point, right? Like the AOCs, you know, the Jamal Bowmans, the Anna Presley's of the world, you know, the squad, like, they are really doing a really good job at keeping this shit afloat. But I just think nationally we have to do a bit better job. And even locally, like messaging is the most important part of campaigning. That is why Bobber Ann Fenton Fung beat Nick Mattiello. And that's why you've seen Cynthia Mendez. She beat former
Billy Connolly,
former senator, smoked him, right? It's messaging. For whatever reason, we just fuck up. Like, we can't master what messaging part. We want to throw out these pie in the sky, like, policy, like, positions at regular middle class folks that don't understand what the fuck you're saying.
Mm.
And then you allow the incumbents or you allow the Republicans or other folks to just come in and cancel that type of rhetoric. And it's awful. So we just have to do a bit better job at messaging.
And we have to accept that, like, you're going to make some of the establishment Democrats angry. that is what progress is about. Like, these people are not going to willingly relinquish their power. Mm-hmm. And anytime that you suggest that they relinquish a little bit of it, they're going to get uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that you need to immediately back down and be like, sorry, I'm sorry, I even suggested it. Never mind. Please don't take away my committee seat. It means that you need to like walk them through it. You know what I mean? If somebody sat down with Joe Ciccarci and walked him through, the voters of Rhode Island care about these progressive policies.
Yeah.
If you are going to lead this state, you need to at least pretend to give a fuck about these progressive policies. How is it 2020 and we still don't have a legitimate marijuana recreational plan?
And he's dead against legalizing marijuana.
Is he really?
Absolutely. He's dead against it. And that's why he said that a couple years ago. He's against it. And that's why I'm so surprised. So I'm like Scott Slater, right? Who's big on the legalization of marijuana. I'm surprised that he's supporting him. But I'm not, because it's Scott Slater. But, you know, it's just the fact that we're in 2020, our neighboring state in Massachusetts, which is like fucking a stone's throw away from Bristol,
is collecting so much money,
right? They have billboards in Rhode Island.
For the Massachusetts dispensaries that you're supposedly not supposed to go buy from and then bring it to Rhode Island and smoke.
Yeah.
Because that would be transporting drugs over state lines and would be super illegal. So we're definitely not saying that anybody does that.
But it's just, you know, it's Ciccarci gets, after the caucus, sits on that table in the halls of in the lobby of the Crown Plaza. And, you know, folks are asking questions, and like the first thing he says, yeah, we're in a $900 million deficit, nothing's off the table, like in terms of like cutting and shit like that. But we're in the middle of a pandemic. Some things have to be on the table. Like, some things have to be on the table. But it's really sad to see a lot of our progressive superheroes in the House support this man.
Well, and I want to carve out, you know, a little exception for the freshmen who headed up there. Granted, there were a couple of freshmen who did not vote for Joe Ciccarci, and we'll get to that in a second. But to the freshmen who did, like, I'm not necessarily mad at them. That's a really fucking terrifying position to be put in. You just got elected.
Yeah.
You're not even sworn in yet. You haven't even paid off the balances from your fucking election.
Yeah.
And now you're going to go in the middle of a pandemic and go, you know, with 75 people you've never fucking met before and stand your ground? Like, that's hard as shit. I voted for Speaker Mattiello my first year.
Yeah, I mean, all of our progressive superheroes, right, like that were in the House at one point, supported Nick Mattiello. Aaron did, right? You did. So, I mean, it's a thing that happens. And then
you learn,
right? Like, I mean, if Joe Ciccarci fucks up, then you go against him. Like, it is what it is. But, I mean, a lot of, you know, the folks that have been in the state house that know how this shit works.
What the fuck are y'all doing? What is y'all's excuse? Like that. Now, before we get because I promise we got a lot to say about those motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the only freshman who does not get the benefit of the doubt, for me at least. And that's Brandon Potter of District 16. And here is why. As a former member of the Rhode Island Political Co-op, you had to sign a pledge in order to be a part of that team, promising that you were not going to vote for the current leadership. Now, purity tests aside, like whether you agree with progressive puritanism or anything like that or not, you made a fucking promise.
You signed a pledge.
You signed a pledge.
Yeah.
You got all of those resources, help, funding, volunteers based on the idea that you were not going to vote for the leadership team. Now, as far as I know, Joe Ciccarci was on that leadership team that you promised not to vote for.
Yeah, he's the number two. Yeah.
Home dude, Brandon Potter, went full Mario Mendez on it. Okay, full Mario Mendez. Now, for those of you who don't know, Jason, can you give us a little background on how Representative Mario Mendez was the first person to pull this shit two years ago?
Mario Mendez had, like, I guess, an endorsement interview with the Progressive Dems of Rhode Island. And he signed a pledge. He wasn't going to support Speaker Mattiello. After he signed that pledge, immediately after, he calls up Leo Scanion. They go out for dinner. Leo's like, let me help you out. Support Nick Mattiello. Mario Mendez's like, yeah, of course. No, I'm definitely going to do it. Supports Speaker Mattiello, fucks himself over, loses, becomes a one-term rep. And which I suspect Brandon Potter will become a one-term rep.
Right, because at this point, it's not about the act of voting for the speaker. I mean, like, if you want to call not voting for Shikarchi a protest vote, I understand that. They didn't have the votes to beat him. And so technically, any vote against him was a protest vote. That is not the point of this. The point of this is fucking integrity. You ran on the promise that you would not vote for this leadership team. And when half a fucking ounce of pressure was exuded on you, you were like, never mind, I'm sorry.
My fault. I didn't mean it.
Word up to RI Political Co-op, who full Mariah carried that motherfucker. I don't know her.
In like 10 seconds.
Oh, good for them. Listen, I don't think, and of course the Republicans will call that eating your own. I do not think that holding people in your party accountable is the same as eating your own. Mm-hmm. This is why y'all have elected officials that promise you one thing and get up there and do the exact opposite. Because for you to dare to suggest that they stay true to their word is considered in-party fighting. Which brings us to Justine Caldwell. I got so much shit for calling her a bad Democrat, which, double down, she is. She's a bad Democrat. Bad. Go sit in the corner after what you did. Because it was suggested that I was emboldening people like Anthony Giarrusso. I don't think that somebody who pitched herself as the progressive for East Greenwich, somebody who was a vocal member of the Reform Caucus, who swore not to vote for Nick Mattiello,
jumped at the chance,
and fucking 4 seconds later sold the rest of the Reform Caucus downriver for a chance to sit at the cool kids table. I think that you should be able to call that out.
Yeah.
I think that if you voted for her, you should be able to have a reasonable expectation that she live up to the promises that she made to you guys. And as a former member of the Reform Caucus, I'm totally fine with holding her accountable to the promises that she made to us. And let's not forget, she sold us out for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't get fuck all out of that. What'd she get? She got a piece of paper in CVS's across Rhode Island that says opioids are bad. Yes, Justine, that's why there are hundreds of thousands of people addicted to heroin. It's because they don't know that opioids are addictive. Thank God you saved us. You fucking saved us. I hope it was worth it. And now it seems like all of the progressives, well, let's not call her a progressive. She's a neoliberal at best. But all of the Democrats in the House have decided to take the Justine Caldwell path to leadership. And just like, no, fuck the voters. Fuck the promises I made. Fuck me saying that I gave a shit about corruption when Speaker Shikarchi was sitting at the right hand of Nicholas the whole time he was doing this shit. Do you think that he went to bat for me when the speaker put somebody up against me? I doubt it. Do you think Chris went to bat for the women who were getting sexually harassed? I fucking doubt it.
It's, you know, it's so difficult for me to see folks like the June Speakmans of the world and out of Bristol, the Kazarians of the world support Joe Shikarchi because, I mean, just, I don't know why. Like, what? I have read nothing but awful things. Since Mattiello lost his election, right? Like, I mean, these reports came out that Shikarchi is already strong-arming legislators. So like, well, his team is strong-arming legislators.
If you don't vote for me, you're going to get a garbage committee.
Yep.
You're not going to get anything
good
passed.
Good luck getting mentors. Yeah. So it's like, what?
How is that any different?
But like, what is he? I guess like, what is different about him, right? Like, what has he promised? Like, who are his staffers, right? I also seen that he's bringing over some of Mattiello's staffers.
I swear to God.
I mean, again, that's a report. Like, we don't know. But that's, I mean, if that's a report and he's not.
To keep Skenyon, Montanaro, and Michael can't keep his hands to himself, Coutinho, like, he deserves to get primaried, generaled, protested. Like, holy shit. You got to know how bad that would look to pretend that you're going to be like new rendition of speaker and to keep all these fucking corrupt clowns around.
But, you know, Blaze came out with a statement that they are going to, you know, the Democrats need to come together to, you know, make changes to the chambers and stuff. But what changes are you making, right? Like some of the things that we need, like some of the things that Republicans are advocating for.
Rules reform.
Line item veto. Like
Inspector
some of the things that I
motherfucking general.
Some of the, like things that I agree with that we need. Even term limits for a speaker. Like you can't be the fucking speaker for the rest of your life. You can't be the most powerful person in Rhode Island But
especially because we have had one speaker in the last like 5 decades who left willingly. Every other speaker has been fucking taken out in handcuffs. Go from
John Harwood, who was like fucking women and he's cheating on his wife, right, in his office. Then you go to Bill Murphy, who left on his own, but he read the tea leaves.
He was gonna get kicked out.
Then you have from Gordon Fox. Was Matty Yellow Gordon Fox's number two?
I believe he was, yeah.
Oh, all right. So then you have Matty Yellow, who is Gordon Fox's number two. Now, Joe Shikarchi, who is Matty Yellow's number two.
I wonder how this is going to play out. But then
you have the fucking genius in Bill Murphy, whatever the hell his name is, pulling the strings behind the scenes, getting the next speakers and all the votes lined up, and who controls one of the top lobbyist firms in Iran. But anyways, I'm going off on a tangent. But it's just, to bring it back in, I want to know what Shikarchi has told the June Speakmans and the Kazarians of the world, because I hold the utmost respect for them. And like to see that they're supporting this guy is just
gotta believe that they wouldn't do that for no fucking reason.
Yeah, and what are the reasons? Like, you should be making it public.
Did he promise you rules reform? Because honestly, I would change my opinion right now. If Joe Shikarchi promised to decentralize power from the speaker seat, all hail the new chief.
But
you know what I mean?
But as it stands, it looks like that his, him being speaker is going to be no different. Maybe a little bit less corrupt, but it's going to be no different than what we endured under Matty Yellow. Right?
I don't know that it is going to be less corrupt, all right? Because as we mentioned, corruption does not necessarily refer to something that's illegal, okay? It can refer to things that are lawful but awful. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be surprised. Like, so did you know that Pranzi, the catering company that fed all of the representatives in the State House, was owned by one Lisa Matty Yellow?
Really?
Really. There are plenty of legal ways that you can profit off the speakership. Yeah. You know what I mean? All the people, all the voters of District 15 have a job in the State House. That's how he got them to continue voting for him. I mean, Speaker Shikarchi has over $1 million in the bank. He can fund every fucking candidate.
He can do whatever he wants.
Every candidate. He probably just promised them each $1,000 for their next campaign. Yeah. Boom. Done. Yeah. He has that. So, like, I wouldn't be surprised to find out that he's exactly as corrupt and that either Chris Blazewski or Joe Shikarchi has a cousin in the fucking catering business who now has the contracts for feeding all the representatives.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously not a huge difference between being a corrupt asshole and being a best friend of a corrupt asshole, right? Like, if you're witnessing this shit and you're not speaking up and speaking out against it, you're just as... fucking
liable.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So, I think now we should get to the third and final reason that progressives continuously shoot themselves in the foot. And that is an aspect of fucking selfishness. I'm going to talk about, the personal experience that I had with this. So 2018, we formed the Reform Caucus. I'm going to be honest, a lot of that was residual rage from the Democratic Party having endorsed my opponent, a Trump-voting asshole who was, like, adamant about spikes on border walls and illegal immigrants are pieces of shit, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Which gained national attention because, like, as it turns out, Democrats aren't super stoked when Democrats fuck over Democrats in favor of arguably a very Republican candidate. And so, we had some meetings with, the reps that were really upset and, came up with what was basically the Reform Caucus, which was, we are not going to vote for Speaker Matty Yellow unless we are promised a reform of the rules in the House. And that goes, decentralizing the power of the speaker seat. That included things like, as we said, the line item veto, the inspector general. It included a lot of those things. And as these conversations were happening, we were trying to establish, who we were going to put up as an alternative to Nick Matty Yellow. Now, this is how that conversation basically looks. Every person in that room believes themselves to be the best possible candidate. But because they're Democrats, they don't want to say that, right? Because that sounds douchey. So what they do instead is they nitpick and attack the characteristics of every person who is suggested as a candidate, hoping that it will then leave them as the only reasonable option. So what ended up happening with the Reform Caucus was you could clearly tell that there were like three or four people who were jockeying to want to be the next speaker, but didn't have the fucking balls to just be like, I think it should be me. And instead, every person that we suggested, like, oh, what about John Lombardi? He's good with the Republicans and the Democrats. Like, well, no, John Lombardi, he's going to get picked apart and the media is going to tear him apart. And
John Lombardi would have probably been the greatest speaker we ever had in Rhode Island.
Oh, yeah. He would have gotten in trouble all the time for not being, quote unquote, politically correct. No. But his heart is absolutely in the right place. And he's one of those people that proves that old dogs can learn.
That's right. And his word is bond.
Yes. He will never fuck you over. He would rather tell you the truth and be like, listen, I'm not voting with you.
Yeah.
I'm not voting with you. Then be like, oh, I got your back, buddy. And then fuck you over 6 minutes later. So basically what we decided as the Reform Caucus was, well, honestly, we don't have enough votes to kill the speaker anyway. And if we put up an imperfect candidate, then all the media is going to focus on is the imperfections of that candidate. Yeah. So in that instance, I think we had 19 votes, 20 votes. It made sense to not put up an alternative and just say, yo, Nick, fuck you. I'm not going to deal with the way this shit is running anymore. Now, there was no reason. There was no reason for that this time, except that I assume that it was once again what happened in 2018, where everybody secretly wanted to be the speaker and resented Lyanna for having the balls to come out and announce before Nick lost and then used that resentment as, you know, a tool to not vote for her. I think that one of the biggest issues with progressives is a lot of them at the end of the day are fucking selfish. And this wokeness is very performative. You know what I mean? You have candidates who move from out of state to run in Rhode Island politics. Okay. And then 4 minutes later start shit talking candidates from out of state who come to run Rhode Island politics.
Yeah.
You have the selfishness of people who are like, oh, I'm going to help you knock doors, but only in the areas of the state where I think it would get me FaceTime for my next Senate election, statewide election, governor race, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And so I think that progressives, a lot of times, while they swear that they care more about the movement than their political trajectory, that's bullshit.
I find that what happens in a progressive wing of our party, it's like folks want to be the first person to do something, right? Like, I want to be the first progressive to do this. I want to be
the first this candidate, first that candidate. Yes.
And it's almost like you have like two wings of the progressive party, right? You have, I'll just drop names, whatever. This is what the podcast is for. So you have like the Aaron Regenberg wing of the progressive party. Then you have like the co-op wing of the progressive party. And it's just like both like wings of the party want to be the first to do something, or they want to take over and do something. And it's like, now, if we all just unified and worked together, we would be able to put up the next speaker of the house.
But nobody wants to share
credit. No, they
don't. Nobody wants to share credit.
They don't. And it's like we all have our own egos, and it's just like it gets in the way of like real fucking progress.
Okay, well, then let me give them a nice selfish reason to be the lone voice in the chamber. In the 4 years that I was at the State House, I never had a fundraiser.
No.
You know why? Because I was so good at my job that people would pay me to do it. I never had to ask for money. I never had to beg for money.
Mm-hmm.
I was honest with my voters. I was honest with my constituents. I was honest with the state of Rhode Island about what was going on up there. I didn't go along to get along. And you know what? As such, I got to avoid the most hated part of campaigning, fundraising.
Yeah. Also, I mean, as your constituent and as your friend, I would always yell at you and tell you to hold these fundraisers.
Right. But my thing is like, I don't want to be beholden to donors. And I'm not trying to go like full Bernie, like $27 a person. You know what I mean? But like, that does matter. Like, I had this little old lady who gave me $2 out of every pension paycheck she got. Every week, I would get $2 from this woman. You know what I mean? I have a pen pal in Tennessee who heard about my election in 2018 when the Democratic Party fucked me over. And he and I still keep in touch. Yeah. You know what I mean? There is something to be said for actual grassroots movements. And like, I'm not saying that everybody can get away with not having to fundraise, but I am saying that there is a monetary compensation that you receive for doing the right thing.
I was so frustrated last couple of months when I was a part of Barbara Ann Fenton Fund's campaign against Nick Mattiello. I reached out to every single person that I knew that was a progressive that hated Nick Mattiello. I reached out to every group. I reached out to every person. And I got absolutely fucking nothing. I got nothing. This goes to the progressive purity test,
but yes, though, right?
Absolutely.
That people feel like if they work for Fenton Fung, that means that they're tacitly improving Donald Trump, which is like not how that works.
Yeah, no, not at all. And what I got was like, look, you know, she's a Republican. I don't really like what she stands for. I don't really like what she believes in, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, look, I don't give a fuck. Like,
that's not
she's
going to
be
point.
one of 10. What is Barbara Ann going to do now in the House that's going to really negatively affect any of our lives or really negatively affect any of our policy positions and what we're trying to do in a state? It won't. And it's like, another thing that I heard was like, you know, we're putting our resources into other candidates. And that's great. Go ahead. God bless you. Do that. But then if Nick Mattiello gets reelected, fuck your candidate, because your candidate ain't going to be able to do shit. And so it's just really frustrating. But then I you know, after the election, it's just me just being upset now. After the election, I go on Twitter, go on Facebook. Oh, yeah. Shout out to all the progressive organizers and laborers that did work behind the scenes for him. I'm like, no, it's
no, none of
them called. I literally called every single one up. Like, I got nothing.
Well, all right. So not to make it all about me, but I am going to say on a personal level,
it's your podcast. Fuck it, make it
about
you.
I asked if it would be helpful for me to make calls for Barbara Ann. And I got a resounding no fucking thank you.
Yeah, so there are two people. There are two people that I did not want to show their face in District 15 or make calls. And it's you and Sam Bell. And it's no to you and Sam Bell. But I just know how Nick Mattiello's team are like, I know what they do.
Yo, I went full cackle. Oh my God.
And so Sam Bell's like, yeah, I'm willing to do whatever. I'm like, Sam, I love you, but no. Like, I'm sorry. Like,
I loved Barbara Ann's response of like, if she's going to make calls, say she's somebody else.
Yeah, use a different.
Don't say it more, Walsh.
Use a different name. Such an awkward conversation.
Dude, so I stayed out of it because I genuinely thought that it was going to fuck her over more than anything else.
Yeah.
And I think that might have been, I mean, I don't know that that was necessarily the mindset of other, you know, less radical progressive assholes than myself. But I also think that, once again, holding our team accountable is not the same as eating our team alive.
That's right.
And I think that the Republicans and the progressives have a lot more in common than they want to admit, because the Republicans voters fucking hate libtard snowflake cucks.
Yeah.
And Democratic voters fucking hate Republican chemtrail anti-vax assholes. And so it's not like politically savvy to be like, oh, I'm going to work with the progressives to get this thing done, because your constituents aren't going to understand that that's helpful to their cause. All they're going to see is that you're working with the fucking snowflakes.
We like it. I mean, I think only, I don't know what, you know, other states was going on in the states, but in Rhode Island, right? Like the GOP in Rhode Island, they just want good government reforms amongst other things.
Supposedly, but
like, you know, that's what they're saying, is that they want good government reforms. Progressives also want good government reforms. So if there is a Republican like Barbara Ann or like a Stephen Frias, I always butcher his last name, but, you know, that's challenging one of the leaders of the party that's preventing us from moving our state moving forward, then I think as progressives, that is a progressive thing to do. You support that person.
Right.
And also Republicans, they should be supporting that person if it's progressive as well. Not that they'll do that, but I'm saying that should happen.
But I think that what we need to do is, you know, rather than getting the electeds on the same page, I think that we need to start getting the voters on the same page, right?
That's
because the last 4 years of Trump has just been like the people at the bottom rungs of the ladder attacking each other for crumbs. And I think that if we all, from, you know, the mad white Appalachian voters to like the mad city, like defund the police voters came together and actually talked about the shit that we have in common as opposed to the shit that we don't, then it would make a real lasting impact. I think that all of the establishment candidates, the establishment Republicans and the establishment Democrats, benefit from all of us being divided and fighting at the bottom for the fucking crumbs, mm-hmm. while they can sit at the top and eat the whole pie and just be like, look at these fucking idiots.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And if it weren't separated on race, it would be separated on class. It would be separated on ideology. It would be separated on any other thing that the establishment people find to divide us further. And so while I think that whole, like, can't we all just get along thing is like a little passe and unrealistic, I think it is very realistic that we stop focusing on the shit that we're never going to agree on and stop trying to convince each other of the things that we're never going to agree on and work instead towards the things that we all want to see happen. Mm-hmm. I don't know any Republicans who publicly admit that they think it's okay for police to shoot people who are committing crimes. I think almost every Republican I know came out against the George Floyd murder.
Yeah.
That's where we find the focus. You know what I mean? You know, they're all about fiscal conservatism. Look at them and be like, okay, do you think that the Providence police, with 80% of the city budget in their pocket, should be doing a little bit better in terms of crime prevention?
Absolutely.
Do you think that perhaps the amount of money is not relevant to whether or not the crimes are committed, but the systemic, you know, nets that we put in drug addicts, for homeless mm-hmm. people, for, you know, domestic violence victims and perpetrators. Like, those are the things that are going to make the change. Like, yeah. Cops shouldn't be handling heroin overdoses and homeless people.
No.
Like, we have services for that. And part of the defund the police movement is just saying, like, cops have too many jobs to realistically expect them to do them all well. Matt Allen and I had a really interesting conversation on this. But I think, again, that the major point is that progressives have to stop being selfish fucking assholes, and our, you know, our love and our care about social reform has to be legitimate and not just performative, right? So I think that, once again, huge shout out to Lyanna.
Yeah, absolutely. She's the only one that had the fucking spine to... Yeah. You do something about it. And that, again, and that is my issue with the folks in the Reform Caucus and the progressives. It's like, we put all of our stock into saying no to Nick Mattiello, but we didn't have any plan. Like, we had no plan.
We had no backup plan.
Like, yeah. Like, what if yeah. Nick Mattiello lost? Like, what were we going to do?
No, nobody even thought about that.
No.
Didn't occur to anybody.
I mean, that's why I have so much, the utmost respect for folks like Gail Golden, right?
Oh my God,
right after the primary, she's like, nah, fuck that. Like, fuck what's going on in the Senate. Like, I'm going to run for president. Like, fuck that.
And I get the impression that Lyanna didn't want to run for speaker. Like, she pulled 2 weeks before the general?
She was a freshman rep.
Right. She didn't want to do that. She obviously thought that there were other people more qualified. But once again, nobody had the fucking balls. And I'm wondering, like, do we really think we're going to have to wait until we have the full 38 votes in the chamber before these people are going to, like, have the fucking cojones to get shit done? Or is there a way that we as voters can ensure that our elected officials are doing the right thing? And I think that that's a combination of carrot and stick, right? So I think it's applauding the Lyannas mm-hmm. and reminding them and letting them know, like, I don't give a fuck that you lost. I don't think you were on the, I still think you were on the right side.
Yeah.
Just because you were on the losing side doesn't mean you were on the wrong one, you know? And I think it makes sense for us to also continue to hold them accountable.
That's right.
And I'm going to be honest, not just in email and calls, tweet at those motherfuckers. They hate that.
Mm-hmm.
They hate that. They will not let you just tweet shit about them and, like, be cool with it. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, you're their fucking boss, and nobody wants to get reamed out by their boss,
that's right.
especially not publicly. So I think that we need to have, you know, a good combination of carrot and stick, a good combination of, like, you know, I'm proud of you for what you did. Here's a donation mm-hmm. for standing up to the speaker. Thank you for that. You know, I'll knock doors for you because whatever. And the stick, I'm just like, listen, I'm not always going to be cool with you rolling over and playing dead for the next fucking mediocre white man in line. All right. At some point, you're going to get primaried and you're going to have nobody to blame but yourself. Like, how the fuck we have this many women, people of color, progressives, like new blood coming in, and we still decided the two middle-aged white dudes were the best that we could fucking do for a ticket is beyond me.
Bars. This is where I'm going to be your hype man. Yeah!
Yeah!
Keep going.
No, I have nothing all left. Right, no I'm way. So sad.
Damn it.
I'm so sad. All right,
stop!
Done. So yeah, I think again, progressives need to grow some balls, get their messaging together, get over it. Daddy is never going to love you, okay? It doesn't matter how many straight A's you get. It doesn't matter how many times you vote for him. It doesn't matter how many shit sandwiches you eat. He will not care. He's not going to play fucking video games with you, okay? Get over it. Also, stop being selfish little bitches. Stop leaning into identity politics when it's convenient for campaigns. Re-elect East Bay women, but fuck that East Bay woman, Lyanna Kassar. You know what I mean? Stop leaning into like, oh, you know, we need to support women of color. We need to do this, that, and the other. Like Sid McKenna, who literally got mad at me on Twitter because I use brown emojis.
No comment.
Okay, got mad at me on Twitter because I use brown emojis, and that is offensive because she's the queen of performative wokeness. But then has never worked for a woman of color other than herself, right? Just Michael Bloomberg, Buddy Cianci, like, pretty sure she's dating Michael, can't keep his hands to himself, Coutinho. So, like, clearly has no problem with other women being bullied and treated like shit. It's just that, like, if you dare to suggest that maybe she should put her money where her mouth is, you're, like, a scumbag, anti-woman, anti-person of color, anti-woke, you know, whatever. And I think that the woke Olympics is really turning a lot of people off to the progressive messaging. And I think that we need to like be aware of that.
Yeah.
And not that I want to be that person that's just like, you know, PC culture is going to turn everybody into Trump voters. Cause like, I don't think that's what it is, but I think that cancel culture needs to fucking die. And I think that all people make mistakes and should be allowed to make mistakes. And like, as long as you own up to it, it's what happens after you make a mistake that's important. So again, throw away the performative wokeness, throw away the selfishness. Don't just knock doors for somebody because you think it's going to help you out in 4 years. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Don't just like make calls because you want to make sure that voters hear your voice on the phone. Like give a fuck about the movement, guys. Give a flying fuck about the movement. And be honest. Yeah. You're taking this Lil Jon thing real seriously. Okay. So finally, we're going to do a little bit of house cleaning. If you are still watching this shit for free, fuck you. Why? My son happens to like eating and I would like to have a podcast set up.
He's starving.
He's so, you can see his ribs. It's so sad. Don't you feel terrible that you're not helping support this young distance learning child? Second of all, make sure you tune in to Uprise RI for all the future videos and pods, of which I'm sure Jason will be a staple in the upcoming weeks. That is if your price tag isn't too high for me. Now that you beat the speaker.
No.
Now that you beat the speaker, you probably cost so much per hour. You're not getting fucking royalties out of this. I'm going to be very honest.
No, that's fine. That's fine. I'll do this for free. But like running campaigns, I'm not. I'm never going to run another free campaign in my life.
Oh, yeah. No, but you better not. Let me just add this.
Maura is a working mom. Become a patron. Because of me, she lost her rep seat.
My God. That is not true.
Hey,
okay.
Become a patron. Listen. Become a patron. She's struggling.
Lost my rep seat because my opponent's first mailer was like, "Hi, I'm a refugee who walked 90 miles across the Liberian desert to save my family from child soldiers." And I was over here like, sometimes when I was a waitress, people talked about my booty and that wasn't nice. So like home dude had a way better message and a way better story that had nothing to do with Jason. What the fuck were we gonna come out with against that?
Yeah, they fucked us up.
Like, what were we? I swear to God, that first mailer, I was
a patron, god damn it.
Seriously though, become a patron so that we don't have to walk 90 miles.
Income tax season is coming up. Just give her your check.
Patreon.com/CanWeFixIt. And don't forget to tune in to Uprise RI. Can We Fix It for more podcasts and videos. Stay safe, wash your fucking hands, and go be a better progressive today.